speaking on the issues that impact. This is the Patrick Henningsen Show on TNT Radio.
This is indeed the Patrick Henningsen Show with me, Basil Valentine, sitting in for Patrick today. He's off on his James Bond adventures once again. I've no doubt we'll hear about it all next week, but have no fear, wherever you are in the world, we've got an absolutely terrific program for you this evening, headlined by the guest I'm going to introduce in a few moments, who is right at the epicenter of world events at the moment. I'm delighted to say I'm joined by Professor Rami Noaman, who is in Istanbul, I believe, where he is one of hundreds of people volunteering to man the Freedom Flotilla blockade-busting humanitarian aid relief ship convoy, which is hoping to set sail for Gaza in the very near future, where to say it is much needed is the understatement of the year. 5,500 tons of humanitarian aid have been gathered together on board the boats, and they're waiting, I believe, we'll find out from Rami in just a moment, for final approval from the Turkish government to set sail, approval that Erdogan, the Turkish premier, is under heavy pressure not to give, from not just Israel, but inevitably the usual suspects, the United States, and quite possibly, disgracefully, the United Kingdom as well. Anyway, we're absolutely delighted to be joined by you, Rami. It's an honour, and thank you very much for coming on today's news talk this evening.
Basil, thank you so much for having me.
So, first of all, are you in Istanbul at the moment?
I am, yes, I am in Istanbul.
And are you on board ship?
No, we haven't actually boarded the ship quite yet. Right now, we are in an area of Istanbul where folks from all around the world, from about 30 or 40 plus countries, are congregating. We're in a location in Istanbul where many of us have been receiving training and mentally and otherwise preparing for the trip that we're about to embark on.
Give my ignorance, but so why would you need any special training? After all, are you not essentially passengers and volunteers, perhaps involved in unloading some cargo or not, as the case may be, but what special training is required?
Excellent question. This isn't a regular ship delivering regular cargo. This is a ship that's heading into, dare I say, more than a war zone, a zone of the world where civilians and civilian aid convoys specifically have been targeted and in a quite lethal way affected in their efforts to deliver aid to the civilian population of Gaza. And we're not the first flotilla in the 17-year-long blockade of Gaza to attempt to deliver aid. There have been a number that have been sent from Greece and from Turkey and from other Mediterranean ports, and quite a number of them have been intercepted by Israeli commandos and commandeered and taken over. And in one case, there was a lethal commandeering of a previous flotilla, the Mavi Marmara, in 2010. So for us to go into such a dangerous situation without clearly understanding the risks and the best protocols to act with would be not doing justice to the gravity of the mission that we're signing up for. And so we're embarking on a mission that is primed with, number one, non-violence activist training, and number two, psychological training on how to remain calm in very challenging circumstances, such as we anticipate if we encounter Israeli commandos, and a number of contingencies that we expect could happen on this trip.
Yes, I think a number of Turkish sailors were killed in 2010 by Israeli commandos firing from a helicopter. The current situation, of course, is even higher profile than that. But we can't discount anything the Israelis would do. We'll return to that in a moment. But first of all, please share with our viewers and listeners a little bit about your own personal story, because I gather you were a professor at New Jersey City University. So you're a long way from the United States. What's taken you all the way to Istanbul to join up with this, in my view, heroic mission?
Well, I think I'm doing the work that a lot of folks would want to do. And I just happen to be grateful and fortunate to come across this incredibly committed and talented team of organizers and find myself with the opportunity to contribute. But I know that many more people want to be here and would have chosen to be here if only they found out sooner and they had the opportunity to join. In terms of my story, I think my story is also similar to many folks that are committed to helping to end the genocide and interrupt this illegal blockade of a civilian population. I'm an American, I'm a Muslim Egyptian American. My parents were both born in Egypt. And I grew up watching the atrocities of American imperialism across the Middle East, in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in many places of the world, and seeing civilian populations ravaged by baseless claims against populations that had no one to defend them in practical terms. And so eventually I came of age. I worked at the United Nations myself. I worked in the Security Council. I rubbed shoulders with folks that wrote books on the importance of interfering when genocide takes place in front of our eyes. And it's so incredible that those people are quiet today. Nevertheless, many of us have chosen to use our voices and to speak with the conscience that we still have, and to verbalize our dissatisfaction with the ongoing genocide. And those of us that have practical means, such as being on this flotilla, or others, such as those that are protesting at Columbia University in New York City, or any of 30 plus encampments across college campuses that have sprung up around the United States, or any other means of activism to illustrate a dissatisfaction with complacency in the face of genocide, I think my story is part and parcel, one of those stories as well.
I quite agree. I didn't hear about the flotilla until it had already gathered in Istanbul. So I am curious as to who is officially organizing it, under what auspices, who has provided the enormous 5,500 tons. Is a very serious amount of aid. I mean, that would make a significant difference to the enforced famine in northern Gaza, wouldn't it?
That's our goal. Our goal is to deliver this aid unimpeded by the malicious Israeli military that has already demonstrated their callousness and their willingness to kill humanitarian aid missions, including the World Central Kitchen staff, seven of whom were assassinated in broad daylight just a few weeks ago. Our goal is to deliver this aid and really make a difference for people who, many of whom feel is the world has neglected them and forgotten about them. In terms of who has prepared this aid and who has made it possible and who the organizers are, this campaign is organized by the same folks that, or many of the same folks that organized previous flotillas under the Freedom, Freedom Flotilla Coalition, the FFC, and contributions that to the 5,500 tons of humanitarian aid that we have assumed responsibility for delivering to Gaza have been made by many, many, many of the Turkish people themselves, Turkey being the country of port that we are departing from. In addition to contributions made internationally, if one was to go to our website, one would find many links that are unique to a number of the countries of the world, ranging from the United States to Indonesia to Malaysia, where folks can contribute and be a part of this mission, both in person up until a few days ago, or through other channels such as contributing financially to the mission's objectives and aims.
Only a fool would believe for a moment that the United States doesn't use its diplomatic leverage as well as what economic power it still has to bully neighboring countries such as Egypt, Jordan, to a lesser extent the Gulf states, but certainly Turkey, into going along with their positions. I'm led to believe that as we speak, Premier Erdogan is still deliberating over whether or not to allow the flotilla to set sail under heavy pressure from the Americans. Can you bring us up to date with any information you'll be getting on the ground on that scenario, and what the likelihood is that you will be able to set off in the next few days?
Well, we're taking one day at a time, and you're absolutely right. The United States has been more than complacent with the ongoing genocide, in the sense that they have provided the literal bombs that have been falling on the civilian population of Gaza. They have vetoed numerous United Nations Security Council interventions that have aimed to interfere and stop the genocide from continuing to take place. So it's no surprise that when folks from around the world are deciding to pick up the responsibilities that governments have left, those including, in fact, beginning with the United States, and deliver aid that is much overdue and much needed, it's no surprise that the same forces and political entities that have chosen to allow this ongoing genocide to persist are the same ones whose vested interests will attempt to interfere with our effort to mitigate the harms of the genocide. And so you're right, the United States appears to be using a lot of its political reserves and its political power in order to pressure and bully the Turkish government as not to allow us to depart from Istanbul in the direction of Gaza. And we are using every resource that's available to us in order to articulate the opposite case, that this is an aid convoy that needs to go and that these people need and deserve the help that we're lined up to assist them with. In fact, under international law, the International Court of Justice articulated that it is the responsibility of every citizen in the world to help however they can. And so in terms of alleviating the harms that are afflicting the people of Gaza. And so for folks to come on and halt or attempt to thwart our efforts to deliver necessary humanitarian aid truly stands against the spirit of the International Court of Justice's ruling several months ago.
Yes, I mean, I can't help thinking that the reason why the United States will be pressuring Erdogan into stopping you from sailing is that they know full well there's every likelihood that the Israelis will attack the flotilla as they have previous ones. And that will be a huge embarrassment to the United States because, you know, quite simply, obviously, as Israel's chief supporter and ally and supplier of the munitions attacking the flotilla, which no doubt includes other American citizens such as yourself, that puts them in a very, very difficult position. So really, the Americans are trying to stop you sailing because they don't want the consequences from the Israelis to come to pass.
Yeah, and it's not to be confused with benevolence or concern for the people on board. There have been so many individuals that have American or Western backgrounds that have entered Gaza, some of whom are American Palestinians that have been killed in the ongoing genocide. It's not from a place of benevolence. It's more from, like, as you said, a place of saving face and trying to avoid a political crisis that continues to add to the burden of political responsibilities and, quite frankly, embarrassments that the Biden administration has had to deal with in the 6 to 7 months of this ongoing genocide. We've seen that the political fallout from supporting and being complacent and, quite frankly, actively enabling a genocide was much greater than was originally politically calculated by the Biden administration and his Secretary of State, Blinken. And what we're seeing now is an attempt to reduce the number of encounters where the hypocrisy of the American political administration is revealed when they're, quite frankly, willing to stand on the wrong side of history time and time again, as we've seen throughout this genocidal episode.
Well, very well put, Rami. It's great to have you with us. We're going to have to take a short break now with the network. When we come back, I'll be asking our esteemed guests to flesh out some of the possible scenarios, including the best case, if and when the boat's set off. We'll be right back after this short break.
TNT's Lembit Open.
I am always disappointed when I see civil servants, and he was a civil servant, he wasn't elected, preaching to the elected representatives of this country about what they should and shouldn't be doing. I wonder what his next job's going to be. Will it be in the Green movement or somewhere else? Fundamentally, my issue is that Chris Stark assumes that everybody agrees that there is a climate emergency. And even more strangely, he thinks it's good for the British economy for us to invest in stopping this climate emergency.
Flip it, flip it.
And today's news talk, TNT.
The Light is Britain's far-right conspiracy theory paper spreading hate and vicious lies. No, that's what the BBC say. The Light is the only national newspaper bringing you the real news and informed opinion on what's really going on today. You can subscribe, order copies, submit articles, and read back issues on our website, thelightpaper.co.uk, and see for yourself why the establishment are so worried about the uncensored truth getting out to people every month. The Light Paper. Not far right, just right so far. thelightpaper.co.uk.
At the top of the hour, we'll keep on top of the news.
It's the most important thing we can do.
On today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
And welcome back to the Patrick Henningsen Show with me, Basil Valentine, sitting in for Patrick this evening. I'm delighted to say I'm joined from Istanbul by Professor Rami Noaman, who is waiting to board one of a number of ships heading to Gaza to relieve the enforced famine there. First off, Rami, how many ships are there planning on going to Gaza, and where are you going to dock?
Excellent questions. So I'm not the logistical chief of staff in that regard. So there's a number of ships. I know that probably in the ballpark of half a dozen. I don't know the exact number of ships, the largest of which alone is a cargo ship capable of carrying more than 5,500 tons of humanitarian assistance, that which includes food and medical supplies and the very kinds of necessities of life that the Israeli regime has arbitrarily and sometimes willingly chosen to prevent the Palestinian people of Gaza from receiving. Things that are as necessary as things like crutches and anesthesia, medical supplies that are responsible for bare minimum standards of healthcare and quality of life, the things that are as mundane and perplexing as chocolate croissants. And so our ship is loaded with many of the things that the Palestinian people deserve and need, and right now are struggling to get a hold of because of the strangling blockade and siege that they're placed under, which of course constitutes a collective punishment, which is a war crime under international law. We have every intention of getting to Gaza, and we're going to take our journey there just as we've taken our time in port, one step at a time and one day at a time.
Yes, I gather from our mutual friend, Medea Benjamin, that your training has included simulations with tear gas and live rounds fired from weapons. Let's hope it doesn't come to that, because in 2010, 9 passengers were killed from a helicopter hovering above the Mavi Marmara, which was intercepted by Israeli commandos. Apparently, the training has been replete with deafening booms of gunfire and exploding percussion grenades and masked soldiers screaming at us, hitting us with simulated rifles, dragging us across the floor and arresting us. It was indeed sobering to get a glimpse of what might await us. Equally sobering are Israeli media reports indicating that the Israeli military has begun security preparations, including preparations for taking over the flotilla. Now, the whole world is screaming in Israel to allow more international aid in. We've got this sort of bizarre black charade of building the pier, which the Israelis are trying to move south, away from where it would most be needed in northern Gaza. I'll be honest with you, reading that and knowing the extraordinary amount of force that they've used in obliterating Gaza to date, I would imagine that the likelihood is that they will intercept the flotilla. I think the chances of them allowing you to land and distribute aid peacefully and unimpeded are unfortunately rather small.
You're absolutely right. We're planning for a wide variety of contingencies. But let me start by saying that no matter what actually pans out, whether we arrive at Gaza and we are successful in logistically delivering the humanitarian aid that we have set forth to deliver, or whether we are intercepted, as is a very practical and real possibility ahead of us, we are considering, as everyday participants in this mission, that either outcome is a success. Because part of what we're trying to do, in addition to delivering this aid, is to send a clear message to the Israeli government and to governments of the world that this is not a blockade that is legal under international law, and it is not one that the world will continue to be complacent with, even if our governments are complacent with it. And so how best to express dissatisfaction and complacent and a lack of complacency, in fact, an active objection to it, than to be willing to put ourselves and our lives and our safety in the line of fire in an effort to demonstrate how important it is to get food to people that are starving. So in either outcome, we are willing to do what is needed to exercise restraint and nonviolence and to use the nonviolent tactics that we have been lucidly trained with as a team in order to deliver this aid to people that, quite frankly, are well overdue for receiving it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. You said that a lot of the aid has come from the Turkish people themselves. I would imagine, therefore, that the Turkish government is under pressure from Turkish people to allow you to sail, while all the pressure not to sail is coming from outside. I heard one abysmal story of an aid ship from Cyprus reaching Gaza a couple of weeks ago, only to be turned back again by the Israelis, who have even been turning around lorries because the pallets on them are not to the precise measurement required. Have you had any negotiations, or do you know if the organizers have had any negotiations directly with the Israelis, such that if and when you arrive, there will be some degree of minimal cooperation?
I'm not in direct contact with the Israelis myself. I'm a participant, and we do have excellent leadership that has perhaps 15 years of experience organizing and mobilizing people and organizations and resources for these flotillas. And some number of them have been successful, not the majority, in reaching Gaza. And many of them have, in fact, been intercepted. And I think each one of them, intercepted or not, has been a success. And every time that one demonstrates the hypocrisy of a regime that claims to be the most moral army in the world, but actively strangles its the people that are under its own occupation by refusing to allow them basic food and necessities and humanitarian assistance, every time that that message is communicated and reiterated, it's quite frankly a responsibility. So I'm not surprised that the Turkish government is under pressure from both sides. There are folks that are seeking to persist in this genocide and enable it. And there are many people of the world, Turkish and otherwise, people of conscience, who believe that we ought to interfere in an ongoing genocide, that we have a responsibility of humanity and basic decency to do what's right. And I think the mission that many of us have on the ship is that no matter how long the blockade persists, no matter how bad or intense the genocide persists, and no matter how many state or non-state actors support this genocide, there will always be someone who opposes the unlawful blockade of the people of Gaza. There will always be someone who will stand in your way, even if that is a dangerous mission to assume. That is one of the primary messages that our team is dedicated to communicating, even in the face of danger.
And danger it is. I've learned this evening from the Israeli government spokesman David Mensah that the IDF is moving ahead with its planned military operation in the southern Gaza city of Rafah. So it could be that simultaneous with your arrival is the most dreadful onslaught and another whole series of massacres and atrocities, as if we hadn't had enough already. Volker Turk, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, has spoken out today about the need for a vigorous, independent investigation into the mass graves at both the Nasser and Al-Shifa hospitals. I find it absolutely extraordinary that that is not the story dominating the world headlines. And I would imagine that the mood in the camp where you are is similar, Ravi.
I think many of us are appalled, but we're unfortunately not surprised, because it's one episode in a long string of unfathomable events that we've seen unfold since October 7th. One of the stories that is very prominent, especially in American media, and I am American, so those stories have been very loud in circles that I'm a part of, are the encampments across college campuses that we're observing, those that began prominently at Columbia University and spread to universities across New York City, and now to apparently 30 plus college campuses across the United States. And I think the reason that story is so much louder than the actual reason that people are protesting and creating the encampments in the first place, which is the atrocities suffered by the people of Gaza, is because so many people struggle to grasp the gravity of atrocities until some part of it is relevant to them back home in person. It's so easy to dismiss an atrocity, especially one that's happening in a country that one doesn't visit, as being minimally relevant to one's own life. And so when one of the reasons that nonviolent action is so important is because it takes the urgency of responding to a situation right to the front lawn of many people who have otherwise deemed it a low priority to consider and have gone about dealing with their daily lives. And one of the reasons that we've come on this mission is to be a thorn in the hide of the Israeli regime that has become so complacent themselves with everyday war crimes, to the fact that they are desensitized to what it means to be human beings. And for them to be reminded by an international coalition of hundreds of volunteers from dozens of countries that they are not only dealing with some number of Palestinians that have been blockaded and closed off from the world in Gaza, but they are still dealing with the entire world that views what they're doing in Gaza horrendously and is dissatisfied with it. We want to remind them that they're not going to get away with this, and we are watching.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think a lot of people are suffering from what's been termed secondary post-traumatic stress disorder, because the scale and the nature of the suffering, the human suffering inflicted on women and children, infants, babies in Gaza, is completely off the charts from anything most of us have ever seen in real life. I mean, 2003, the illegal invasion of Iraq caused a similar amount of death and destruction, although nothing like as concentrated as the assault on Gaza. But the internet was in its infancy over 20 years ago, and we didn't have the social media or streaming platforms and opportunities the way that we do now. This is what's made all the difference and made the gaslighting by Israel supporters in the United States that much more difficult to pull off. Indeed, I think this is the issue which has the greatest degree of moral clarity that I've ever encountered in my lifetime. And yet, there are, of course, people not just in Tel Aviv, but in Washington as well, who still claim that Israel is the force of good, and that the Palestinians, including all the babies and children, are somehow evil. You're an American, Rami. What on earth can we do to unpick years of brainwashing that have brought people to that scary inverted conclusion?
I think that's such an important question to ask. Social media is doing such an effective job at revealing the hypocrisies of that narrative, that there's one side in this equation and it's the Israeli side. They're supposedly the most moral army in the world. It's very hard for your everyday American or your everyday global citizen to reinforce that narrative when they are barraged with an endless stream of war crimes, not once a day, but perhaps dozens of times a day, revealing quite a different narrative, one that is very, very, very difficult to disagree with. You're talking about two sides, one that is a civilian population and the other, which is one of the most powerful nuclear armed armies and militaries in the world. And the one that is nuclear armed is the one that is relentlessly assaulting the civilian population. I think when we see the graphic, unadulterated images of that unfolding day by day by day on social and sometimes conventional media as well, people that have otherwise never really considered the relevance of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict to their own lives are beginning to take serious issue with this. We're seeing a major demographic shift where young people in the United States have determined that this is their cause. Folks that are not just Arab, not just Muslim, folks that are Jewish, folks that are Christian, folks that don't profess a specific religion, people from a wide variety of backgrounds who simply are honest with themselves and have allowed the previous cognitive dissonance that tells them, hey, I'm believing one thing, but I'm seeing so much evidence of the counter narrative that I can't suppress it anymore. Those people are deciding, I'm going to take action. I'm going to disagree with the narrative that I've been told because something needs to be done. And as that's beginning to unfold on a massive scale, I believe we're going to see one of the most consequential shifts in the public understanding and internalization of the Palestine-Israel narrative. And I think it's going to truly affect the presidential election coming forward.
It most certainly is. I mean, Biden's support has been absolutely cratering among young people, among young progressive Jewish people particularly, as well, of course, as Muslims, and he's got no defense. The old lesser of two evils argument has lost all meaning, just as the anti-Semitic slur. How can you be the lesser of two evils if you are actively participating in genocide? There's nowhere else to go. It is the ultimate crime, the ultimate evil. We're going to take a very short break now. When we come back, I want to ask Rami about the United Nations Relief and Works Agency and the entirely specious claims, indeed I would go so far as to say lies, that were inserted into the global conversation, resulting in many countries withdrawing their support, only deepening the famine, which Rami and his cohorts are attempting to alleviate. So we'll talk about that and the ongoing relief efforts in Gaza after this short break.
As a combat wounded veteran, I know how hard it is to come home and build a meaningful life. When I was in Iraq, our vehicle was hit. A rocket-propelled grenade exploded right under my seat. Traumatic brain injury, a fractured pelvis, severe burns. They didn't think I was going to make it. I had to learn to walk again and live with the scars, both visible and invisible.
DAV helps veterans like LaToya get the benefits they've earned. They help more than a million veterans every year in life-changing ways.
With DAV on my side, I was able to pursue my dreams. If my story can touch a heart, it can change a life. My victory is overcoming my wounds so I can help other veterans.
LaToya Lucas, may your victories inspire many more. Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
We all know what it's like to feel alone. But it just takes one new connection.
Want to get out of here?
To empower many.
This is unbelievable.
It doesn't take a superhero to bring forces together. We all have the power to reach out.
Let's go!
and help someone feel like they belong.
Pretty cool, huh?
We are stronger together.
Patrick Henningsen talks on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And welcome back to the Patrick Henningsen Show with me, Basil Valentine, sitting in for Patrick just today. Israel appears to be readying to send troops into Gaza's southernmost city of Rafah, the only isolated corner of the strip that has not seen fierce ground fighting, or should I say, total aerial bombardment and destruction, and where more than half of the Palestinian territory's population of 2.3 million people are seeking shelter. The Israeli military has said just today that two reservist brigades have been mobilized for missions in Gaza, while a video that circulated online appears to show rows of white tents popping up in the vicinity of Khan Yunis, just 3 miles north of Rafah. Khan Yunis itself, of course, absolutely decimated. Now, the Israelis have spoken before about how they are going to herd the Palestinians like cattle into these tents. The arrogance is what gets me. What on earth gives these people the right to think that they can herd people around like this, like cattle, while destroying their homes, livelihoods, blowing their limbs off and everything else? I mean, I was speaking a bit before the break about the moral clarity about this situation. I'd like to find somebody willing to come on air and defend all this, because to me, it is absolutely obscene. Amongst the lies that the Israeli administration have told over the last few weeks, of course, is that members of Hamas, a tiny handful, it was claimed, only five or something, were involved in the United Nations Relief and Works Agency, the main humanitarian agency supplying food to the starving of Gaza. As a result of that, the United States, UK, Germany, all pulled their funding. Here we are 2 months later, an investigation by former French Foreign Minister Christine Colonna said that the evidence, the Israelis had produced no evidence at all, none, of terrorists or so-called terrorists being in any way involved with the UNRWA. So on that point, I'd like to bring in my guest, Rami Noaman, who is in Istanbul with the Freedom Flotilla, for his view on why do you think the Israelis made up these lies about the United Nations Relief and Works Agency. Today, the Germans have said that they are going to resume working with them 3 months too late, much to the irritation of Israel. They've expressed dismay at the fact that Germany are going to start feeding the starving again. Doesn't bode very well, I'm afraid, for the flotilla, does it?
If one is looking at why Israel chose to propagate lies against the Palestinian people or against UNRWA, which was supporting them, it makes very much sense in the context that they actually chose to enable an ongoing genocide, and that they've been acting in the direction of complete annihilation of the Palestinian people, not only since October 7th, but quite frankly, this began 75 years ago when they entered Palestine and the Nakba took place, where hundreds of thousands of people were displaced from their homes. Tens of thousands of people were killed, massacred in their villages. This isn't new. This is an ongoing pattern that has deep, deep, deep historical roots. And when one is keen on a total annihilation of another people, and then observes that there is international support to help those people who are oppressed and that are suffering from injustice, the only conclusion one would have is to get that annoyance out of the way. So, quite frankly, the Israeli regime only views UNRWA and only has viewed them as an annoyance, an obstacle to their true goal of ethnically cleansing Gaza from its Palestinian indigenous population and to claim that land for themselves. It's not a surprise. It's very consistent with their behavior. This just happened to be timing that they viewed as appropriate and opportunistic. The other side of their opportunism is also quite revealing, because when Iran very recently launched rockets in a retaliatory manner, not an instigatory manner, it was retaliatory, of course, in the sense that Israel bombed an Israeli, Israel bombed an Iranian embassy in a third party country of Syria, and killed diplomats, something that you do not do under international law or under any political or diplomatic norms. When Iran responded to that, what was Israel's first visceral reaction? It was to go to the United Nations and to have an emergency Security Council meeting. It's surprising and it's ironic and it's quite laughable, frankly, because that same state of Israel claims that UNRWA and the United Nations itself are infiltrated by Hamas. Which one is it? When it's an opportunity to use the relative neutrality of an organ like the United Nations or an organization like the United Nations or its organ, such as the Security Council, if it's opportunistic in a moment to decry them as being affiliated with Hamas, then they will do so. And then the very next moment when they want to elicit a response and solidarity and empathy and to play the victim card, then they rely on the full capability of the United Nations or any of its subsidiary organs in order to try to win a political political win. So one should not take the Israeli regime seriously. They are a regime that has lost all credibility in international and political discussions. They are trying to insulate themselves through whatever opportunistic means are available to them, and whatever they say truly holds no credibility in the eyes of the observer.
Well said. Unfortunately, they do still have a lot of credibility with the capitals of Europe and North America, where people wonder exactly what kind of hold the Israelis have got over politicians, that they can get them to do their bidding. One of the few good things, and of course it's come at the price of terrible suffering in Gaza, but one of the few good things to have come out of this nightmare is the fact that Americans are starting to wake up to the malign influence of organizations like AIPAC and the millions of dollars that they funnel to candidates that they approve for Congress, for Senate, so that, I mean, virtually no dissent is allowed on Capitol Hill. You know, Rashida Tlaib was hauled over the coals for saying from the river to the sea, Palestine should be free. It's extremely dangerous to stand alongside her. But that isn't the opinion of most Americans, who, as a result of decades of brainwashing, would probably still call themselves broadly Zionist. But the majority want to see a ceasefire. Most want to see an increase in aid. We've got all sorts of problems connected with the Middle East and with the Israeli regime, not least of which, of course, is the way it is described in the media. Because Israel enjoys the trappings of statehood, it can therefore commit whatever atrocities it likes. And we all have to wait for war crimes investigations. Whereas because Hamas and the Palestinians merely have organizations, they can be much more easily designated terrorists, and any violence that they commit designated a terrorist act. And as we all know, since 9/11/2001, terrorism is the greatest evil in the world. You know, according to frankly, Western logic, killing five people in a terrorist act is a much more serious crime than killing 5,000 people with bombs dropped from the sky by government-authorized jets of one stripe or another. This also runs as far as the way the Israeli regime is described in the so-called liberal press in Britain. For example, The Guardian, a paragraph here discussing the imminent ethnic cleansing of Rafah, which I'm going to translate into a language which no doubt people would take objection to, but to my mind, and quite possibly to yours, Rami, is a far more accurate depiction of what's actually going on. Israel's Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, right, for that read the Zionist Godfather and his war cabinet. For that read and his genocide gangster gang. were expected to meet in the next 2 weeks to authorize civilian evacuations, ethnic cleansing, which are expected to take a month, at the first stage of the Rafah offensive, the Rafah massacre. That's according to Israeli media outlets. But as I say, the trappings of statehood mean that the Guardian treat the likes of Netanyahu, a war criminal, who I'm pleased to say the ICC under Karim Khan are finally apparently considering war crime charges against and issuing arrest warrants. He enjoys this kid glove treatment in the liberal press, even after 15,000 children have been killed and thousands more mutilated. Rami.
You've said a lot that resonates with exactly how many of us are feeling. We're feeling a sense of frustration, to say the absolute least, that people who are mass murdering civilian populations, leading, in fact, targeting children, targeting civilian institutions, targeting hospitals, targeting aid convoys, targeting the United Nations staff themselves, and charging them, of all things, with association with terrorist organizations. Sometimes it feels like we're living in a mad world. Personally, when I see these things take place, I try to stay as level-headed as I can. I try to remind myself of what I know to be true. I know that there is a criminal gang, something similar to what you've mentioned, that is responsible for leading the Israeli government, and they are leading the Israeli military to perform unfathomable acts of violence against the civilian population. We see with our own eyes, and I know, the extent of damage that is being incurred and afflicted upon the Palestinian people. And there is a clear aggressor in all of this, and there is a clear victim. And quite frankly, despite all the narrative and spinning, it's very hard for a reasonable person that is honest with themselves to continue to believe that Israel is the victim in any of this. Israel is quite frankly the aggressor, and they are responsible for the ongoing ethnic cleansing of a people. And as you mentioned, when it comes to these crimes of ethnic cleansing and genocide, these are the worst things the mind can imagine. And for them to be panning out in real time, for them to use Gaza as a testing ground, as a sandbox for their own national military industrial complex, to say, we can sell you these weapons, when they try to sell them to third party countries, because we've already tested them in Gaza, is an abomination, and it's a shame on the human consciousness. So what I try to do is I try to stay as level-headed. I try to consider what is it that is within my ability to control? What can I do personally to move the needle, even if it's a little bit? And I think the people that are truly depraved in this world are the minority. Sometimes they happen to be in power, as we see in the Israeli regime. But I think the majority of people have a sense of reality and a sense of consciousness where they want to end suffering. They don't want to be complicit in outright suffering. They may not always be informed as to who is responsible for the depravity and the mayhem and the violence. So it's our job as fellow citizens to take small, piecemeal, but consistent efforts to inform one another, to share news of what is true after, of course, verifying our own sources, to command what is good, to forbid what is outright evil, and to do what's within our means. Many of us came on this flotilla that you opened the conversation today with me discussing, because we've seen for 6-7 months the ongoing onslaught by the Israelis and the overall complacency of Western governments that have power and influence over Israel and the international community at large. Complacency to do nothing. But as citizens, we want to do something. And so for us, it's about, ideally, if we're successful in this particular regard, delivering aid and moving the needle, even if just a little bit, on the humanitarian assistance needs that the people of Gaza require. And on the other regard, sending a very powerful reminder and welcoming the political crisis that it might create, that We are breaking the siege. We are challenging the lockdown by the Israeli Navy over the civilian population of Gaza. We are challenging the legitimacy of it. We are challenging the legality of it. And we are challenging the reality of it. And now you ship that is, or a series of ships in this flotilla that are coming to you. And if you want to say that there is a blockade around Gaza, then you will have to defend that blockade against civilians. And let's see how that looks. What is your justification when civilians that are bringing food and humanitarian assistance and medicine are coming to challenge a blockade against the people that you're bombing? In that regard, how do you defend the legitimacy of such a blockade?
Indeed. I mean, I shouldn't think the Israelis give a damn. Such is their arrogance and insular thinking. Unfortunately, you know, people like Chuck Schumer, now Nancy Pelosi, is saying, oh, Netanyahu is the problem. Get rid of Netanyahu. He's the one dragging Israel down. I mean, to hear Chuck Schumer say that Israel might become a pariah state, I mean, I never thought I'd hear those words in my life. But unfortunately, he does represent mainstream Israeli opinion. I don't think they could care less how they look to the outside world should they intervene militarily against a civilian flotilla bringing humanitarian aid. But, and we are coming to the crunch both here and in Rafah, it will put the United States, the United Kingdom, the European Union, and all the rest really on the spot, because the people who swan around in smart suits like David Cameron and Tony Blinken and Ursula von der Leyen cannot possibly defend attacks on a civilian flotilla delivering aid. Simple as that. They're a line in the sand. Now, they've also said there's a line in the sand with any major ground offensive in Rafah. They've all been urging restraint, all the rest of it. The word on the street is that in return for not going in hard against Iran, Netanyahu agreed with the White House that he would be allowed to go in hard against Rafah. This was a deal written in blood over a week ago. Any large ground operation there is going to have to be coordinated with both Washington and Cairo, given the location's proximity to the Egyptian border. Finally, before you go, Ramin, it's been great to have you with us this evening. Very difficult to speculate, but which way do you think things are going to go over the next week or two?
Our job is to do what's within our power. Our job is not to predict the future. Our job is to do the best that we can do right now. Right now, that is doing the training that is going to mentally and otherwise prepare us for a challenging path ahead. Tomorrow it's going to be, or sometime very soon, it's going to be boarding a ship. The next day it's going to be sailing. And when we get to a point where we're encountering Israeli commandos, we're going to do the best thing that we can at that time. So let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's not expect that we have to solve the crisis as individuals, but we do our part. We put our faith in God, and we do the best thing that we can do. And we do what the governments of the world have neglected to do themselves.
Ramin Nouaman, thank you so much for joining us for Istanbul with your particularly eloquent and erudite exposition, and we hope to see you again soon. I'll be back after the break with Tony Gosling. Who killed Jill Dando? He thinks he's got the answer. We'll be right back.